I'm joined on the line by writer Dan Jeffries. Dan is going to be talking about his book, which is Me, Myself and I, and also he runs the UK Acromegaly Support on Facebook. So are you there, Dan?
I am. You haven't cut me off, don't worry.
Thank God for that. Acromegaly, have I said it correctly?
You have, yes.
I'm in remission, as you know, from acromegaly. Tell everybody about what acromegaly is and how it affects people.
Okay, well, acromegaly is a benign tumour that grows in the pituitary gland. And the pituitary gland controls all your hormones. So estrogen, testosterone, growth hormone, and so on and so forth. It usually takes about 7 to 8 years for it to be detected. So it's a very slow-growing, benign tumour. I'll repeat that again, so it's not cancerous. The effect it has is that it causes the body to usually produce lots of excessive growth hormones. So if you're a baby or a child and your body produces one of these tumours, you become a giant, gigantism, and all your features are in proportion. But if it happens to you when you're an adult, you can't grow up anymore because you're already fully grown. So you grow out, thicken. So your feet get bigger, your hands get bigger, your facial features start to change, so your teeth and your jaw can change shape, your forehead can get bigger, and also your internal organs can get bigger as well. So your heart can grow, your limbs can grow, and if it's not diagnosed, in the older days when it took a long time to diagnose, say 20 to 30 years, the impact would be huge and a lot of people would get displaced limbs and, you know, real serious problems, enlarged hearts. Now that the diagnosis is quicker, it's still too long, but it's generally quicker, a lot of the side effects or the big complications can be minimized. And then what happens is that once you've been diagnosed, you would usually go for surgery. They go up the nose and basically find the pituitary gland right at the base of the brain. And then they dig out this little tumor and then, fingers crossed, you're better. But for a lot of people, they may still be some residual tumour, and so they have to undergo medication, sometimes radiotherapy. And really, once you've been diagnosed with it, even if you're in remission, like both you and I are, you kind of have it for life still. You know, I'm 10 years since surgery, and I still have complications with my vision, with my teeth. I have an enlarged heart, so I have leaking heart valve issues. So it really can mess you up, and it's what's very strange about the condition is that as it's developing, you know something's not right, and you know you're changing, and you know you look different, and you know you feel tired and got no sex life and all of this, and you're thinking, but why? I don't understand why. And that's why it can take so long for it to be diagnosed, particularly because a lot of doctors are just unaware of it as well.
Yeah, we will say about the sex life, some of us are a bit luckier than others, but what Dan was saying is because it affects your hormones. So it's sex hormone, it affects all your hormones. I mean, I noticed that my hands and feet were getting bigger, and I kept looking at myself in the mirror, and I thought, I don't look like, and I felt very tired all the time, but I just thought, I don't look like me. Something, I'm looking more manly. And I've never been a stunner, to be fair, but I just noticed that I kept saying, my nose is getting bigger.
It's weird. I mean, I would bump into people that I went to school with and they didn't recognise me. And I'm thinking, have I changed that much?
Yeah.
So it's very odd. And actually, for me, I mean, my diagnosis of the acromegaly was completely by accident, to be honest, and I won't reveal it now because it's a great moment in the book, and I don't want to give any spoilers, but it was a real hallelujah moment for me to finally know what was wrong with me. And it wasn't just me, you know, feeling weird or old or tired or anything. There was something wrong and something could be done. So it was a big thing.
And also, we have to say that you and I are in remission, but a lot of people, we are very, very lucky. In fact, my endocrinologist said you're very lucky, although it can actually come back. But a lot of people who have acromegaly and they've had the surgery, they still have to be on injections. I think it's everyday injections and medication and all sorts of things.
Yeah, there's different treatment options. I mean, some people, my tumour was 7 millimetres, so it wasn't huge. There was one girl I met at the acromegaly event that I organised last year. Hers was 7 centimetres, and that's huge. And it can do things like wrap its way around the optic nerve, you know, and she lost vision in one eye because of it. You know, it really can have a big impact. And yes, for some people, they are on meds for life to combat it.
It is very rare, But the things that people need to sort of look for is tiredness without explanation, which is always going to get sorted out. Also kind of headaches or just not feeling right in the head. Also, if your facial features, if you notice that your tongue is getting bigger, because I started getting them a lisp, your shoe size, your hands, and you just can see your face is starting to not quite look like you. They're all kind of pointers that you might have.
I mean, there is a big myriad, and also it becomes complicated that not everyone with acromegaly necessarily has the facial features changes. But things like teeth, that, where there's a big drive by the Pituitary Foundation in the UK at the moment to make dentists aware that if you're having teeth problems, gaps in your teeth, for example, I had to have two large molars removed 2 years before diagnosis. And if my dentist had been aware that my lower jaw was protruding and I couldn't bite down on my back teeth anymore, she may have gone, I wonder if you need to go and get a blood test.
Yeah.
You might have this condition. So, yes, visual issues, if you're finding fuzziness in your eyesight, if you're feeling tired, lack of libido, hands and feet changing are a big thing. If you can't take the rings off your fingers anymore, or if you've suddenly gone from a size 9 to a size 11, which is what I did, I mean, that's not normal when you're 25, 26. So these are all the things to question, and a simple blood test by your doctor can show your growth hormone levels, whether they're elevated or not. And then they go on to MRI scans, you know, to sort of detect how big it is and so on and so forth. But, you know, never be afraid to do a bit of research and go to a doctor if you really think that there may be something wrong.
Now, you've set up the UK Acromegaly Support, which I think is absolutely...
Well, I have to correct you slightly. Oh, I didn't set it up. So somebody else has set it up, and I'm an active participant in it.
Okay, so it's a fantastic tool, because somebody puts down, has anyone else got this symptom or has this happened? I've answered somebody's question this morning. It's absolutely fantastic, because before there was nothing really online for anyone who had acromegaly at all.
So I remember 10 years ago when I was diagnosed, there were a couple of message boards. And there were quite a few videos, actually. YouTube had a lot of surgery videos and things like that, but that can be quite frightening for people. Facebook has massively opened up the communication. It can be a sounding off board for people that are feeling low or confused or scared, especially if you've just been diagnosed. So to come onto a group on Facebook and say, I'm really scared, I've just been diagnosed with a brain tumor or a pituitary tumor, what's going to happen to me? And then everyone in the group goes, hey, look, we're all still here. 2 years surgery down, 10 years, 25 years past surgery. You know, everyone is there to support and say, it's a scary journey, but you're going to come out okay the other side. And one of the things that I've actually asked someone that's attending the Acromegaly conference at the end of the month, she was there last year, and she attended 2 or 3 weeks before her surgery. So it was invaluable for her to talk to people. But she's going to stand up this year and say how she feels 1 year on.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an incredibly empowering thing to do. Whereas last year she was scared and worried, and a year on she's confident, feeling better, and in a position to share her experience and help other people. And that's what I love about advocacy, and social media is... helped with that massively.
And the one thing I have to say is, when I first was diagnosed, I went to see one surgeon, because I started reading up about it, and the surgeon, if he'd have been selling double glazing, I wouldn't have bought the windows, because I just felt, I thought this is not right. And went looking into it, the better the surgeon you have, and you can go to any hospital, the better the outcome. And I ended up going to the UCLH in London with a fantastic surgeon who did, I think she said she did about 80 to 100 surgeries a year, where the other person I was going to see did 30, which is still really good, but she
more experience they've got, the better.
Yeah.
I mean, my surgery was particularly complicated, because I have another incredibly rare condition called Wyburn-Mason syndrome, which has left me blind in one eye. And that's resulting by a mass of blood vessels, and those blood vessels around my eye and my brain were in the way of the path of surgery. And they didn't really tell me this too much, and a few weeks after surgery my endocrinologist said, you don't know how brave and skillful your surgeon was to do that. He said, I wouldn't have tackled that. So I thought, blimey.
Glad to tell you after, not before. I've got a book out called Me, Myself and I, EYE. So tell us about the book.
Wow. It's I was at dinner in about 2013, and I was kind of telling my story around a table of people. And whenever I tell the story, there's always a little bit of stunned silence at the end. And this girl that I was sat next to just said, "You should write a book." It was like a light bulb moment for me, and I thought, do you know what? I will. So I started putting my story together, getting all my medical records, and then I started thinking, well, I want to share some of these records. I want to share some of these notes, some pictures, and I write music, so I want to share some music, and I've got videos, and how do I do that? So I came up with the idea of doing an app or a website that accompanies the book. Mm-hmm. So as you're reading, in the footnotes, it may say, have a look at picture 6, and then you go and have a look at it on your phone, and then it kind of accompanies what you're reading in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a kind of completely novel way of working, to be honest, and never really been done before. So the book's been out for about 3 years now. It does really well. I've had some great reviews and a lot of really good reviews from people with acromegaly, and that's you know, so vitally important and so heartwarming to when people say to you, there's not much information out there and your book explained exactly what I needed to know. That's great. And it also covers a lot of issues that men might not want to talk about, and it's very funny and quite rude at times and very candid, and I have to now and again say, if you're my mum or dad, you might want to skip this bit. So, you know, I'm trying to make it not light-hearted, but you know, a true reflection of my character and the experience that I had, you know, growing up with Wyburn-Mason syndrome and then discovering that I had this acromegaly as well.
So you're very, very rare.
I'm incredibly rare. Well, acromegaly is probably, I'm not totally sure about the figures. I think it's about 5 to 10 per million.
Mm.
The Wyburn-Mason is about 1 in 70 million.
Mm.
So I've only met one person in Europe with it.
Yeah.
The rest are in America. So to have Wyburn-Mason and acromegaly, you know, it's kind of unheard of, really. So I see it in a strange way, like this weird mixed blessing that I've, you know, been given these two very rare conditions, but also the character, I suppose, to be able to talk about them and help other people as well. So I feel very fortunate in a strange way.
We've got a meetup coming up for acromegaly,
30th of June at the Queen Elizabeth's Hospital in Birmingham. It's free entry. We've got nearly 50 people attending now.
Wow.
That's a mixture of acromegaly patients and a few partners.
Mm.
But I'd say we've got probably 30, 35 acromegaly patients attending,
yeah,
which is amazing. I mean, that's, you know, and we've got a brilliant agenda. We've got specialists talking. We try and make it fun and lighthearted as well.
Yeah.
Not just PowerPoints all day. So it's a really, really good day. So if anyone's listening or they know someone that has acromegaly, come along. It's free. Lunch is included. It's a really, really good day.
And don't forget to check out the web on Facebook, UK Acromegaly Support. And also, yep, Dan's book is All the W's, Me, Myself and I. That's eye.co.uk. And you can have a look at that there. It's lovely to talk to you finally, Dan.
Yes, I know. We must do it again.
We will do it again. In person, I feel. In person.
Yes. And,
lovely to talk to you. And good luck with the book. I know it's been out for 3 years, but it just will continue to do well.
Let's hope so. Thanks, Michelle.
All right, you're welcome. Take care then, Dan. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.